You are listening to Habsent-Minded, brought to you by HabsEyesOnThePrize.com. Hello and welcome to Habsent-Minded. My name is Jared Book, and joining me today from Sober Seven Sins, our former sister site at SB Nation, is Beata Elliott, a writer there. Beata, how are you?
I'm doing very well. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to limit the trash talk. I know that Canadians fans and Senators fans don't always get along. I can't even trash talk the PWHL team in Ottawa because they have some of my favorite people in the world. So we'll keep it civil.
One. I didn't agree to that personally. I will be trash talking.
It's all right. Some of it's probably deserved, if we're being honest here. Let's get started with, I think, the big question, and there's a lot of teams in this division that kind of have this kind of expectation of taking a step up, and Ottawa is right in the middle of that group. Last year, I think there were expectations they would take a step up, and in some cases they did, but maybe not as big as they were expecting to. What are the expectations for Senators fans, especially going into this season?
I think Sens fans really feel now like the Sens need to make the playoffs now, but I don't know if that's so much looking at the roster and saying that they should. I think a lot of us understand that it's going to be very difficult for the Sens to make the playoffs just because the Atlantic is so difficult. But I think there is now a lot of frustration within Sens fandom at how good the Sens have looked at times over the last few years and how long we've waited for them to get back into the playoffs. And it really feels like it needs to happen this year.
And would it be fair to say that the frustration is more centered at specifically the GM, Pierre Dorion, the head coach, DJ Smith, and not so much the core itself, right? Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I think especially DJ Smith, a lot of fans have not been happy with him for a while now. Personally, I tend to be a little bit more positive about DJ Smith than other fans, but one of the big problems with the Sens over the last few years is that it feels like every single year they just completely tank their chances at getting anywhere near the playoffs in like November, right? Like they just get off to these awful starts and then end up kind of picking themselves up and playing well down the stretch. And I think when that happened again last year, everyone in Sens fandom sort of said, this is it. We're not doing this again. We're not taking, you know, positives from how they played in January and February anymore. Like they need to play well in November this year.
And obviously the big story of the summer was the ownership getting settled. It's been kind of a long time coming. There've been rumors about it for pretty much, I think, almost all of last season as well, until it finally got settled before this season. Has that kind of energize the fan base a little bit? Is there kind of like a fatigue around that? Like how is that factoring into it as well? And obviously it's when you look at the patience that they'll have with the GM and the coach kind of specifically, it kind of all plays into that, right? A little bit.
Yeah, I think right now Sens fans are more just excited to not have to care about ownership anymore. I mean, I won't speak ill of the dead right now, but we had many years of caring about ownership a lot and having to think about it constantly. And I think the excitement kind of happened around last year when the Melnick sisters took over and there was all this talk about Ryan Reynolds and Snoop Dogg and all of these cool celebrities thinking about buying the Sens. And because Michael Landlauer won the bid and he's just like some random billionaire, I think the attitude is more like, okay, now that's done. We don't have to think about this anymore. Let's just talk about hockey.
Yeah, you know, you go from Ryan Reynolds and Snoop Dogg to just a Habs fan.
Basically.
So let's move on to the players. And you know, obviously there's a young core that's pretty much in place for the Senators right now. And most of them are locked in to their kind of long-term, you know, prime year contracts, specifically Tim Stützle, Brady Tkachuk, Thomas Chabot as well. What are kind of the, is, you mentioned that the belief is, or the goal is to make the playoffs this year. Where does that have to come from? I mean, obviously you saw steps forward last year from a lot of that young core. Is kind of the expectation that they're going to take another step? Where are those extra points going to come from this season?
I think what's important right now is the depth. And I think that is where the Suns have improved over the last year. Obviously, I think that Tim Stützle has another gear in him. He got 90 points last year and he looked like he could get more. Same with, you know, Brady Tkachuk. I think that those players are capable of getting more points. But I think what's really important is that in preseason, we've seen, you know, massive improvement, or maybe not improvement, but we've seen really nice things from Ridley Gregg, massive improvement from Roby Arvensi. You know, who knows what's happening with Josh Norris, but hopefully if he comes back into the lineup, that kind of pushes everyone further down the lineup. And we've seen a lot of young players who have spent a few seasons in Belleville come to Ottawa and really impress people in training camp. So I think the hope is that instead of having one really good line and a bunch of bad lines, they're going to have like at least a solid top nine this year.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the new reality of the mm-hmm. NHL is that yeah. you kind of have to have a top nine to really compete. And that's, you know, maybe even in some cases more important than having kind of that top line that's very good. Obviously, you know, the defense over the last couple of years has been kind of the question mark, right? The young offense, the young forwards, you know, surrounding them with, you know, last year, you know, Alex DeBrincat, this year Vlad Tarasenko, and then, you know, Claude Giroux as well. And the defense, you know, got a big bolts boost last year and Jacob Chychrun. How much has that changed kind of the outlook of their team? And obviously, you know, he played the end of last year. And so there's not kind of a new feeling, you know, entering this preseason or training camp. But what is that? And, you know, and obviously you have Jonas Korpisalo as well. So there's an upgrade in goal as well, kind of a more solid 1A there. So, you know, is that kind of a big difference from when you look at the Senators from the beginning of last year to this year?
Yeah, I think that's really the biggest difference, especially goaltending. The Sens have struggled a lot with goaltending recently, and I'm not going to say that all of their struggles have been because of goaltending, but there were some games where, like, if they had just, they couldn't buy a save, right? And if they had had better goaltending, they might have gotten a few more points, right? And so far, like, you know, the Korpisalo contract definitely raises eyebrows, but he has been fantastic in preseason. So, and Anton Forsberg has been great for as long as he's been with the Sens. So I think a lot of the optimism comes from the goaltending being improved. And yeah, the defense, I think, is the best the Sens have had in recent memory. Even during the Carlson era, they did not have good defense. And yeah, like, as you said, you know, Chychrun joined the team last year, but he was injured for a decent part of that. And also, like, the pairings were so messed up that we didn't really get a good sense of what the Sens defense would look like with him. But now he's been playing consistently with Thomas Chabot. They've got a really solid second pairing with Sanderson and Zub. Brännström has been, well, last year he was crushing those bottom pairing minutes. And so it really looks like the Sens have like three solid pairings for the first time, literally since I can remember.
And, you know, kind of going into that, I mean, it really does seem like this is the best that they've been in a long time, just, you know, kind of solidifying the depth here. And what do you think is, like, if they make it close, if they're playing meaningful games in April, is that enough, do you think, to save the jobs of the coach and GM? Or, I mean, I guess the better question would be, would fans be yelling for their jobs, I think, regardless of how close they get to the playoffs? Or how patient are fans? Like, are they running out of patience in terms of this management group, I would say?
I Yeah, I think fans are running out of patience to some extent. I think that, yeah, if they end up like 1 point out and, you know, it's because, I don't know, Buffalo suddenly like takes this massive leap forward and, you know, there's no way that they could have caught them or something like that. Like, I think people would understand that that's still a step forward. But, you know, like I said earlier, I do think that people are pretty fed up. I mean, I mentioned Buffalo. They must be even more fed up than Suns fans are. But it certainly feels like there will be people calling for DJ Smith's head at least, possibly Kyle Daniel as well.
Yeah, it kind of feels like every time something happens, people are like, oh, like I think even since the ownership group was finalized, it was kind of like, okay, what's going to happen with Pierre Dorion? And
yeah,
and it's kind of funny because he has been there quite a while, and it's Ottawa's kind of you know, a few years ahead of where Montreal is, right? So you kind of see it from that perspective, and you can kind of throw Buffalo into that as well, where, you know, you can see the progress, but it's just really tough to compete with the Tampas and Torontos and Florida. You know, everyone thought Florida was going to take a step back and they just make it to the Stanley Cup final. and then, you know, Boston is one of those teams where I'm not sure. It can be hit and miss because they can, I don't think they'll be as good as they were last year. But nobody expected them to be as good as they were last year. So who knows what's going to happen. But yeah, it's the Ottawa team is, you know, I might anger some of the Canadians fans listening to this, but they are building it the right way. And it just feels like, will they get to that point where they're competing? Because, you know, they have their stars on those big contracts, and once they start those big contracts, it gets harder to surround them than it would be. You can look at, you know, a lot of other teams that have had that issue as well. And yeah, I can definitely see why the clock is ticking on especially the coach, but even the GM as well. You mentioned the Josh Norris thing as well, and obviously he's a big part of this. You know, when we lose a top six center who's under 25 years old, it obviously impacts how you look at the lineup and the team. But when you look at the, you know, the players surrounding them, is the biggest question, not even because they had such good seasons last year, is the biggest question how they're surrounded, like how Tarasenko fits in? You know, Matthew Joseph has been the subject of trade rumors because of the salary cap. With the waiver news, I'm not sure if he is the guy that needs to necessarily move out for a guy like Shane Pinto. But what is the supporting cast, and who, if the Senators make the playoffs this year, where like who is the person that's going to be that the maybe underrated player that's going to make an impact in that? We've already talked about the Korpisalos, the Chikrins. Who's the guy that if they make the playoffs is one guy that maybe fans outside the market don't necessarily appreciate?
That is a good question. Yeah. And I think a lot depends on when the Shane Pinto contract gets done and what needs to happen for that, because the Sens literally do not have the cap space to sign him right now. And they don't have any really obviously bad contracts that they need to get rid of. Like, people talk about, you know, dumping Mathieu Joseph, but like, he's still a good player. He's not like horrendously overpaid. So, you know, who knows what kind of changes will need to happen to bring in Shane Pinto. And I think that if and when he joins the lineup, I'm assuming he's going to be in the lineup by the time the Sens make the playoffs, if that happens. But I think he will be a big difference maker, because, I mean, again, hopefully Josh Norris is healthy and playing the 2C role, and Shane Pinto can slot into that third line center role where he has historically performed a lot better. But I also think that people should pay attention to Ridly Greig, partly because he's been very good and partly because he is just an absolute menace on the ice. So teams will not like to play against him. But he did really, really well with the Sens last year and should be able to slot into like a third line role really, really well, or potentially even play up on the second line. He's a very tenacious player and has a good scoring touch, and I'm a big fan of him.
Yeah, you know, you don't have to, you know, it's funny you mentioned Matthew Joseph, because I feel like just for the games against the Canadians alone, he's worth keeping around. It seems like he scores, and this goes even before his days in Ottawa. He just always seems to play his best in Montreal. And obviously he had, I believe it was him, who had a really good World Juniors in Montreal.
Just something about the Francophone players, because it used to be Jean-Gabriel Peugeot all the time, right?
Right, exactly. Like there's always like these, Ottawa seems to Ottawa and Tampa seem to really collect these, the French Canadian players that just aren't really heralded, but Montreal Canadiens fans think they're the best in the world because they always score at the Bell Centre. And yeah, Ottawa seems to have them more often than not. Which just stokes the rivalry, I guess, a little bit even further. I do want to because looking at their salary cap, it just seems like they, you mentioned it before with you know, they can't even fit Shane Pinto in. Is there a concern around that? Like you know, obviously the expectations of cap's going to go up, and you know, it's not necessarily a bad thing to have all these young superstars locked up, but is there a concern that about how what you know getting everybody to fit under the cap going forward, or is it just kind of like you know wait for this year, wait for the cap to go up, and things will sort themselves out?
A bit of both. Like I think there is some concern, but it's mostly about past decisions. Because if you look at the Sens, like. Cap situation right now, their big problem is that they have all this dead money on the books from, you know, the Bobby Ryan buyout, from retaining salary on Matt Murray, Colin White buyout, like all of these bad decisions in the past that like are still haunting them in a way, right? I think Bobby Ryan might be off the books now, but like, you know, a lot of buyouts and retained salary and stuff that, you know, it's really frustrating, but also there's nothing we can do about it right now, right? But the thing is that the Sens, you know, thankfully don't have any like really egregious contracts. They have a few guys who are maybe a little bit overpaid and a few guys who are a little bit underpaid. And, you know, some of them are probably going to look even more overpaid once underpaid once the cap goes up and everything and they improve a little bit. So I don't think that people are overly concerned, but we've do need the salary cap to go up, especially since they've already extended Jake Sanderson starting next year. So that's already a bunch of extra money that's on the books.
Yeah, you mentioned the dead cap, and just looking at Cap Friendly, it's about about like almost $5 million.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, that's the Shane Pinto contract, right? Like, you know, that there you go, that's your problem.
Yeah, exactly. And it does go down to, you know, 625,000 starting next year. Mm-hmm. So a lot of that dead cap is going away. So that will factor in for a lot of the Sanderson contract as well with that. But yeah, it's definitely it doesn't help the situation, especially when you look at a guy like Pinto, who is just sitting there unsigned because of cap space. So what is, you know, I don't want to like overlook the Stutzels and the Tkachuks. I know that we talked about them a little bit, but I do think they deserve a little bit more attention. Like, is this kind of like the best group of forwards the Senators have had since like the days of like the Spezzas and really competing, like the Alfredsons? Like how exciting is it for the Senators to have that kind of group locked in? Are they really the you know, you look at Tkachuk, he's 24, Stutzel's 21, Norris is 24. Like there's still a lot of years in there. Like there is pressure to make the playoffs this year, obviously, but how exciting is it to know that this is kind of just the beginning of that kind of wave?
It's very exciting. And yeah, it's definitely the best forward group that they've had since probably the days of the pizza line. Like it was wild actually, when Josh Norris scored like 35 goals a few years ago. It was literally the first Sens player to hit 30 goals since like Jason Spezza in 2012 or something, right? Like they have not been very strong at forward for a long time. And you know, they've had a few good names. They had Mark Stone for a few years and all of that, but yeah, the forward group hasn't, at least in recent years, been their strength. So it's really nice to see some like legit superstars at forward right now.
And they, it helps that they kind of, you know, they're all kind of in it together. Like it's mm-hmm. weird because you usually when you see a young core like that, it's something that happens because, you know, they win in the AHL level, but so many of these players have never seen the AHL. And so it's kind of like they're learning to win together and play together in the NHL itself. And it's kind of an interesting dynamic in that way. And I guess it's in a little bit, in a way, it's a little bit similar to Toronto as well, right? Where they had a lot mm-hmm. of guys who just kind of made the NHL at 18, 19 and just kind of, you know, went from there. And you know, there seems to be a with the Senators in particular, it just seems like there's, even when they were good, there were reasons to not kind of believe in them, even from their own fan base. Like there were always you know, whether it was goaltending or even the run with Stone and Carlson when they got to the Eastern Conference Final. And it always seemed to be like, okay, yeah, well, that's not sustainable, and things like that. So, I mean, how is the road kind of paying off? Like is it looked back fondly the way that it's gone, a little bit, or are fans just excited to get to that next stage?
I think we're definitely reaching the point where fans want the next stage, but yeah, it is like, it is really exciting because, yeah, as you said, like the years, the Sens had a long stretch where they were just a bubble team and they would make the playoffs every other year and, you know, have a fun, exciting run that was really fun for us, but was never really that sustainable. And, you know, as much fun as we had with the Hamburglar run and in 2017 and all of that, right? Like, I think, you know, those were also years of frustration about ownership mostly and just about the direction of the team. And there was a sense within the fandom that the team was just kind of always going to be mediocre and never truly like excellent, right? And obviously we had like the experience of having a world-class like superstar with Carlson, but it's nice now to have a team with a lot of really, really good players that feels like they could actually be, you know, a good analytics team and could be legitimately good. It's been a while since we had that.
Yeah, definitely. I think that it's interesting because the Senators and Canadians, I think, have a lot in common in terms of recent history, where they had a world-class player who wasn't really surrounded that would kind of lead them to places they shouldn't necessarily have been, in both Carlson and Price. Mm-hmm. And then they kind of decided, no, we need to do this right and kind of really rebuild. And the Senators kind of, they started out a little bit earlier in their process. They've already had kind of the multiple picks and you know, they got Sanderson and, they had two picks that year, two first. Was that the Stutzel year as well?
Yeah,
they get
yeah,
Stutzel and Sanderson in the top five. Yeah, so
it was the Erik Karlsson trade that they got an unprotected first from San Jose, right. Was supposed to be very good, and then San Jose just plummeted to the bottom of the standings, and it turned out to be some Stutzel. So that was a little bit of luck there,
right? Yeah, because they had the choice with the Duchene trade to either give up. They could have kept the Tkachuk pick or given that. Yeah. Right? Is that basically what it was?
Yeah, they did. They had fourth overall in 2018 and were supposed to be even worse the next year. And they said, we're going to hold on to fourth overall and we're going to reach for Brady Tkachuk at fourth. And that was not very popular at the time. but of course, it worked out fine. They didn't give up Jack Hughes. They gave up Bowen Byram, I think. So it was fine. It worked out fine. At the time, it was not popular.
Yeah, I want to talk about that a little bit because the 2018 draft is a year that a lot of Canadians fans and look back on not fondly, and a lot of people were saying, oh no, you know, the pick wasn't Kotkaniemi, the pick should have been Tkachuk. But Senators fans were quite upset with the pick at the time, right? Like they Tkachuk wasn't the one that they wanted, even keeping the pick, correct? Like,
yeah, we wanted
it was
Zadina,
right? It was Zadina, yeah, well, exactly.
It was like the Sens do have a history of overvaluing like toughness and stuff, and so people were worried that the Sens were going to like, yeah, overvalue Tkachuk. I actually have a fun story about that specific draft. I've told this on other podcasts before, but I watched that one at a bar in Ottawa with a bunch of Sens fans that I'd met online, like people from Sens Twitter. And when the Habs drafted Kotkaniemi, they showed a bunch of like really angry Habs fans in the crowd, and everyone at the table like cheered so loudly that the staff at the bar came over and said, "Do you guys want us to change the channel to like, I think it was a soccer game that was going on, because like you're clearly not watching the draft." And we said, no, we are cheering for the sad Habs fans right now. This is our reaction to the draft. And they went, okay, because we were all discussing like how clearly they're not watching the NHL draft if they're that enthusiastic about it. And then of course we also got like really mad about the Sens drafting Brady Tkachuk and may have almost flipped tables, but again, that worked out fine.
Yeah, I just want to. I'm glad to touch on that, because that's a point where a lot of people are like, no, that was always going to be the pick, and I'm like, that's such revisionist history, because even Senators fans were not thrilled with that. And there's a lot of fun draft day moments. Our former sister site at Broad Street Hockey also had a great
yes,
video when
I
they
remember
thought they,
that.
when they thought they were going to draft Cole Caulfield and then did not, and that one worked out for the Canadians at least. But yeah, it's always interesting to get the perspective of Senators, people who follow the Senators, about the Tkachuk pick, because it definitely was a situation that wasn't as foreseeable. As it is now. Looking back now, it makes sense. But at the time, even Senators fans weren't thrilled with that pick. Beata, thank you so much for taking the time and discussing the Senators with us. I hope that this year goes a little bit better between the two sides. I'm not optimistic though. There's still a lot of bad blood between the fan bases.
I am not hoping things go better. I'm ready for the battles. I am a known Habs hater. That's what happens when you grow up francophone in Ottawa. You do not like the Habs.
Yeah, I think those it's always funny, because I never saw the Senators as a rival, and then they played in the playoffs. And
I feel like it was 2013 that really,
it was the whole, it was the first, it was 2 years in a row, because it was the first year was the hit on Lars Eller, and Paul McLean, and all that. And, the bug-eyed walrus,
the line brawl and the Peugeot hat trick.
Yeah, exactly. And then I think it was the very next year when the Subban and Mark Stone was, or 2 years later?
No, that was 2 years later, because the Sens didn't make the playoffs in 2014. Right. But then 2015 was the Hamburglar run.
With Stone and Subban and all that. And that was those two runs really solidified the rivalry. If there was any doubt between the proximity and things like that, those two runs really, really solidified the hatred, I think, between the two sides, and made it a lot, I want to say, more fun, because I think that because when the Senators were good, Montreal really wasn't. Those early years were the early 2000s were more again with Toronto, and those playoff series, and then Montreal was kind of, when Montreal was better, Ottawa really wasn't, and then it really took off 2013, 2015. In those 2 years, and now we have a women's hockey rivalry budding as well, which will be very interesting. But I'm not going to trash talk PWHL Ottawa, because like I said off the top, they have some of my favorite people in the world, it's definitely not something that'll happen with me. Maybe down the road, there'll be a rivalry, but in my eyes, I just can't get mad at Emily Clark and Emma Smashmeyer and Brienne Jenner.
No, see, I'm doing the opposite thing. I'm doing the Sens fan thing where I'm like trying to hype myself up to hate Marie-Philippe Poulin. Like, she's been one of my favorite players for years. Like, I literally have her jersey, but I'm just like, no, she plays for Montreal now. I have to cheer against her. Like, I have to find a way to really, really hate her. So I'm working on that.
Yeah, it's funny because Montreal had the opposite problem when Hillary Knight came to play in Montreal. And, you know, she was obviously someone that was not easy to like, but they ended up, there was no issues when she's playing here. And now she's back in Boston and it's like, oh no.
Oh, well, and Ottawa has a rivalry with Boston too, because they took Jamie Lee Rattray.
Like, yeah, that's a big one. Like, I feel like there's the rivalries are starting because of who other teams picked. Like, Montreal picked up Jillian Dempsey from
Boston. Oh, that was hilarious.
And Boston fans are not happy about that. And it's definitely going to be fun as we get into training camps in the next month or so. And thank you so much for taking the time again, Silver. Seven Sens, going the independent route, like Eyes on the Prize is a little bit. Thank you so much for taking the time. I can't say best of luck this season, but I'm going to say it. I hope you have fun. Let's put it that way. I have no ill will with you. I hope you enjoy the season.
Thanks so much. And thanks again for having me. And I do wish ill will on the Habs.
Yeah, you know, I'm trying to be diplomatic. I can't. My dad's a Habs fan. My dad's a Leafs fan. Sorry. I've kind of grown up with that kind of, why do we all hate each other? It's just a game. So I'm more diplomatic than most, I would say. Except I don't really like Boston very much at all. I have no reason to like them. But
yeah, that's fair.
When it comes to Canadian teams, I kind of like, you know, we can kind of get along. It's okay. Thank you so much for taking time and have fun this evening.
You too.